Hey, it's Paulette again, and I'm honored to bring you another episode here on the Thriving in Chaos Project, now in its fourth season. I bring you resilient survivors, key resources, and experts in their fields to lighten the load and shine a light on the path forward from confusion to conclusion through all things divorce and transformation. So let's get started.
Hey, it's Jackie. My podcast, The Natural Healing Reel, features guests from all over the world. They're sharing their stories of natural healing modalities. My intention on the show is to aid people with alternative ways in healing, physically, mentally, and emotionally. This podcast recognizes the essential role that mainstream medicine plays in our daily lives. And in no way should this be taken as medical advice. Please seek the advice of a competent medical professional for your care as you see fit. And most importantly, take care. Today, my guest is Paulette Rigo. She is a certified divorce coach, credentialed mediator that specializes in coaching women through high conflict, domestic violence, parental alienation, estrangement, and narcissistic divorce cases. Welcome to the show, Paulette.
Well, thank you so much, Jackie. It's an honor to be here and to educate and inspire those in your audience because it's such a powerful topic and one in which you can make a myriad of mistakes. So I'm happy to be here to be of any guidance and assistance I can.
Well, I would love to know right kind of from the beginning, how did you come upon this work? Like what happened in your life? And, you know, how did you educate yourself on all of this? Because it's quite a huge, huge field. And all of us, I believe, are experiencing this more than we're not. Mm. So I think you're information is invaluable. So share.
No, thank you. Well, I will try to make it a quick story. Otherwise, we'll have to make this 5 podcast episodes and edit them into a series, which maybe we should do. But with that caveat, sidebar, never mind all my legal jokes. So Jackie, I had no, and I mean no interest in doing this work. Zero. I was not the little girl that woke up at the age of whatever and said, I want to be a divorce expert or a family law attorney or a mediator, hang out with judges and lawyers and realtors and mortgage experts and insurance people and tax experts and parent educators and psychiatrists. And, you know, you get the idea. There's, you know, divorce encompasses every aspect of your life. And every cell in your body. So it's going to affect the psychological, mental, emotional, physical, sexual, spiritual side of love and romance and divorce. But it's also going to affect the judicial, legal, financial, residential, lending, insurance, taxes, what I call the spreadsheet side of divorce and love and romance, right? We don't realize it, but when you put on the pretty little white dress or whatever color, mine was pink, and you march down the aisle and there's a handsome whomever at the end of the aisle, that there not only should be a justice of the peace, a rabbi, a priest, a minister, a BFF, you know, what are they called, officiants now, there should also be either a judge or a lawyer saying to you, FYI, people, you know, wake up, just so you know, you're entering into a legally binding contract. We don't realize that, Jackie, right? Because we just want to have a big ass party with a pretty cake and invite a lot of friends and, you know, have this thing called a wedding. And now we're going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya and walk off into the sunset together. If you haven't, it's from this show, Godspell. All of you LA people should probably know what I'm talking about. But, you know, the Kumbaya, like we're all just going to hold hands and dance around in a circle wearing daisies in our hair. And everything's going to be fairies and pixie dust and sprinkles and puppy dogs. It's all going to be rainbows and happiness. And forgive my sarcasm. I grew up in Boston. It runs in my blood, but it's not, you know, I mean, yes, love is beautiful and marriage can be a phenomenal connection and an amazing relationship. But as you know, in Canada and the US, about half of marriages, well, end in divorce, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't, you know, the statistics are growing. I know in the US that divorce increased 43% because of the pandemic. That was 2.4 million divorces. And that's one every 13 seconds. I've never been busier. I'm not happy about that, but it is what it is. But going back to that starry-eyed innocence that we all have when we get married, we don't realize that marriage is a legally binding contract. And the only way to end that contract or divorce is to enter into yet another legally binding contract. And if one is if you're litigating, one is the plaintiff, one is the defendant, and you're now in a lawsuit, which brings up a myriad of emotions and financial concerns and major impactful lifelong decisions. So I had no interest in doing this work. I actually wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to be Jane Pauley. I don't know if any of you know who the heck Jane Pauley is, but she was kind of that, I don't know, influential role model in young women's lives. She's about 75 years old now. And she was one of the first female daily news journalists on the Today Show back when NBC was, you know, the peacock and the whole thing. And I was like 4 years old and like, mommy, mommy, I want to be her. And I loved how she was just so smart and witty and how she always brought joy and information into the lives of people. So I went to college for journalism. And while I was in school, at the dorm sophomore year, the phone rang and my mother, who ran a rather well-known performing arts studio in Boston, where I grew up, not in Boston, but in the area, pretty close, just west of Boston. The phone rang and my mother started most sentences with something that started like, would you be good enough? And the sentence was, would you be good enough to sub Penny's classes for her while she's out on maternity leave? And well, if your mother starts most sentences with, would you be good enough? And you say, no, well, Jackie, guess what?
You're not good enough, right?
So guess what I did? So there I was, you know, teaching a 4:30, a 5:30, and a 6:30 jazz class on Tuesday afternoons for the 6 weeks that I thought I was going to be subbing her classes for her. Well, 20 years later, my dear, I was still there. So naturally, there goes my career in journalism. I did work in TV, radio, and marketing, but I got thrust into this performing arts world that I grew up in. And I don't do anything halfway. So, you know, put my heart and soul into it, grew the business, choreography, teaching, loved it. And at the age of 17, before all this happened, I met this charming young man. And he swept me off my feet. He didn't ask me to marry him. He told me to marry him. It was marry me was the sentence, not will you marry me, but just marry me with the ring, you know, in the rain. So here I was now in a career that I didn't find. Like, I didn't want to be a dance teacher, right? And in a marriage that was like, well, how did I get here? It was just one that kind of fell in my lap, as they say, you know, marry me. So here I was now at the age of 30 something, married with three little kids in this late life that was like, how did this happen? There was that song that Talking Heads had written. I don't know if you Talking Heads fans out there, but it's called Once in a Lifetime. It's a rather well-known song. I'm sure you, if you Google it, but there's this line that David Byrne sings and it's something like, this isn't my beautiful wife. This isn't my beautiful house. How did I get here? And the tears just streamed down my face when I heard that song, thinking, how the hell did I get here? Now, I wasn't miserable. I wasn't suicidal. Don't get me wrong. But I let everyone else make my decisions for me. Where I went to college, what I did, who I dated, what I did for a career, who I married, how many kids I have, pretty much their names too. Although I did name the third one. But regardless, It eventually felt uncomfortable. I would even say I felt like I was wearing someone else's shoes. You know that feeling, or dare I say, don't get grossed out, everyone, using someone else's toothbrush. It was just that feeling like, ugh, it just felt uncomfortable. So eventually I did gather the courage to quit the job teaching dance. And that was really the muscles I needed to develop to gather the strength and the courage to then also make the decision that as much as I love so much about this life, it wasn't really the life of the marriage or the situation that felt like a good fit. It didn't feel like me. And I know a lot of people can't identify with that and probably thought I was a selfish little brat for not just sucking it up, being quiet and keeping the little black dress on and wearing the mask and being the happy little wife. I was told to look like Barbie. So in some ways I did, you know, so here I am with the blonde hair and the blue eyes, or they're actually green, but I don't know. Some people say they're blue. Some people say they're green. Who cares? But, and it just, again, Jackie, felt like, who am I? So with that, now here I was in my early 40s thinking, what the heck? So I did gather, we went to therapy and coaching and, you know, I really did realize that he was very much, it wasn't all his fault. I was just as much at fault of the demise of the relationship. And that's important for everyone to know. It does take two to tango. And we do have to own the role that we play in the demise of every decision that we make, whether it be good, bad, or ugly, as the other Hollywood stars say. So now you have this situation where you can either do everything you can to fix the marriage or make a decision to try to divorce wisely, navigate it well, and divorce with dignity. Well, unfortunately, that's not what happens. So 97% of divorces do manage, Jackie, to stay out of trial. That's pretty good, right? 97%. So 3% go to trial. And of that 3% that go to trial, 1% of the 3%, which is even smaller, goes to the appellate court process. Well, you're looking at the 1%. That was me. I personally endured an 8.5 year fully litigated divorce case that included all of the preparation, the discovery, the interrogatories, the you name it, sua sponte orders. We even had a gatekeeper, a discovery master, private investigator, a business evaluators, GALs, you name it, we had it. And there was a 12-day trial that took place over 9 months. And then after all that shenanigans, there was a 4-year Supreme appellate court process. If you do not agree with the judge's order or decision, you do have the legal right in the United States. I don't know about Canada, but probably that you can appeal it, which, you know, I actually work with a few attorneys in Canada too, but I don't know the laws quite as well. But you have a right to now say, I don't agree, but you have to have reasons. You can't just say, because, you know, I don't agree, but you have to have counts or reasons. So there were 17 counts that he filed with his attorney. And without getting into the details of that, it was an incredibly long 8.5 years. It cost a fortune, a lot of estrangement, parent alienation, you name it, I experienced it. And because my case is so rare, right? It got a lot of notoriety. People reached out to me via phone. This is prior to what social media is now. Social media was in its infancy when people used to actually just, like, Instagram was just showing pictures of flowers. You know, it was like a photo album. Remember those days? Dan, yeah. Could we go back? But anyway, and Facebook was like, hey, I'm going to the dentist. You know, now it's, yeah, don't get me started. But so, you know, people would reach out via social media, email, phone, text messaging. That was getting popular in the 2008 to 2016. And also ringing my doorbell. And it was, the conversation would start something like, I read about your case. I heard about your case. I can't believe you're going through this. Why is it taking so long? What's going on? But you know what? You're hanging in there. Like, good for you, you know? But then the conversation would always go with something like, can you help me? And part of me wanted to hang up the phone and say, no, you know, like, are you kidding me? I don't need any more drama. I've had enough of that. So, but my grandmother taught me to be a good hostess. I made a lot of coffee. I poured a good amount of wine, not all at the same time, and listened to a lot of stories. I took copious notes and eventually called my attorney and said, and we got to know each other pretty well after 8.5 years. And his name is Marty. And if with a Boston accent, it's Marty. So I said, Marty, a lot of people are reaching out to me. I don't know what to do. Should I go to law school? And he laughed and in his Boston accent said, you know, Paulette, you'd be one hell of a litigator. You think like a judge, you act like a lawyer, and you feel like a therapist. And I can hear him saying it to me. And of course, this one little tear rolled down my cheek. And I took it seriously. I actually considered applying to law school. I still get emails from them like, are you sure you don't want to do it? Maybe another lifetime, Jackie, but right now. So he did introduce me to a woman who was a divorce coach. It was a whole new world. And I said to my attorney, I said, wait, what do you mean you think I should become a credentialed mediator and a certified divorce coach? How come I don't have one? Like, why don't I have one? And he's like, well, I don't know. I didn't really think you needed one or wanted one, or there weren't any around, right? So I did a lot of research, credential, you know, certifications, training, interning, mentoring, you name it, which led me to eventually do that work to become a mediator, a divorce coach, and a consultant, and found Better Divorce Academy and author my book, Better Divorce Blueprint, and kind of go back to my roots of launching a podcast called The Thriving in Chaos Project, because you do really have to thrive in the chaos. So with that said, I am now, as of a month ago, also taken on the position of Director of Coaching and Management for a company called Divorce Right, Inc., which is a two-tiered HR corporate solution to both the expense for the HR and the corporate side of divorce for corporations, but also matching an employee with the right coach so that we can help them get through their divorce wisely and managing their case if they so need to be. So that is my story of how I got in this world, why I do what I do. I'm saving an average of $45,000 to $65,000 in legal fees, about 8 to 22 months in court, and a ton of heartache and bad, bad decision-making. I took all the mistakes I made, brought them into one university academy, because there's a lot to learn, and specializing in those high conflict, high asset, narcissistic personality disorder, contentious, adversarial cases, because those are the ones that people make the most mistakes in. They don't know what to do. They're caught up in the emotion. They make these very emotional decisions, or they throw in the towel and walk away and realize, man, was that a mistake? So thank you for bringing me here. I'm happy to always be of a resource to anyone. And I don't just work in high conflict cases, but because again, I am the unicorn, the 1% of divorce cases. My expertise really can help those that are in trials where they just simply do not know. We are not taught how to go to court, what to wear, what not to wear, what to say, what not to say, how to prepare, how to survive a deposition. And finding the right attorney that can advocate for you. There are many methods of divorce. Unfortunately, litigation is one of them that you really do have to understand wisely. It's a very expensive, very emotional, and it's easy to make mistakes.
Yes, yes. How true, how true. And so I think many of us don't realize that there is that kind of help out there as well, because, you know, I unfortunately am just beginning my third demise of a marriage. And so I'm hearing you. And the first time, I mean, it's just devastating because you feel like you've lost, you're a loser, you didn't succeed, you failed. You know, it doesn't matter how hard you tried, you know, people just, you know, you realize somebody, who somebody is, and paths grow in different directions. And I think, you know, society really, really beats us up, because it wasn't until maybe just this last generation that you were not looked down upon, and still you are, especially as a woman, you know, and going into a marriage, if you've been divorced before, it's like, oh, she's been divorced. Like, it's such a label, and it's, you know, and I think the emotion is just so challenging for it on. Yeah. And anyway, it's, I think that this is such a gift that you have come here to speak with us today, because I think there's more of us, like you said, with the COVID, like, that's incredible. Being at home with those abusers, and they couldn't get out of the house. Imagine that. You know, they had, you know, usually where their abuser wouldn't come home until the nighttime. Now they're in the house for 6 months. That was a real awakening when that was going on, to think about how that was happening.
Yes, I get an average about 5 to 10, sometimes 12 to 15 women predominantly, because 70% of divorce is filed by women, and 2 years is the average amount of time that women contemplate internally in their own little private Idaho, as I call it, for those B52 fans out there. They don't have the courage, the resiliency, and they're too concerned with what will the neighbors think and the stigma attached to what divorcees used to be perceived as, right? Crazy, irresponsible, unreliable, just, you know, flighty people, that they made bad choices and they have to live with their choices. And there has been this stigma, you know, look at, you know, the way divorce has been perceived in the media over the course of the last 50 or 100 years, right? I mean, the very first divorce, believe it or not, was in Massachusetts by the Clark family. It was in 1535. So it's interesting, the stigma. Now, Mrs. Clark was only allowed to request the governor, because the governors were, of course, attorneys back then, and you had to go to the governor and request for divorce. And she was only allowed to be granted a divorce because her husband had abandoned her for 10 years. Wow. Need I say more? So now we go forward 500 plus years, and we still think about it with the word abandonment is still thrown away around, like it's some, you know, like, oh, abandonment. Like, what is that? You know, I moved 8 miles up the road and there were rumors that I abandoned the children. So, you know, it is what it is, but, you know, we never make assumptions. So not about me, but I make assumptions about me. I don't care. I have no secrets, but in general, you know, it's sad that you feel this burden from family, neighbors, coworkers, employers, friends, society, culture, religion. I could keep going, but, and that's unfortunate, because it leaves a tattoo, a mark on your soul, thinking like, I'm a failure. Because we, especially as women, identify as wife, mother. And if you get divorced, all of a sudden, what, you're no longer a wife anymore. And then you know, that gets blown up to smithereens. So, and you know, it isn't the end all be all of your identity. Your identity is a person, is a soul, as a being. It isn't mother, wife, daughter, sister, friend, neighbor. Those are just labels that we throw on ourselves. You're not really the list of things that you think you are. And divorce kind of brings you back to that core of your soul, of your being, as to who am I? What are my core values? What do I stand for? Integrity, authenticity, honesty, truth, strength, resiliency. You know, those are just some of mine, but there's a list of core values in my book, actually, on page 66 and six. Well, it's 46 and 47. And I make all my clients circle. You have to pick 25 and then down to 5, because we forget who we are. And somehow when we get married, we, you know, sign up for these things, not literally with a piece of paper, but we do. We get to the back, you know, we get in line. I always say we drink the Kool-Aid, you know, that's expression, right? And don't drink the Kool-Aid, people. You know, stop drinking that. Well, that's a bad thing to drink anyway, but don't do things that are not part of who you are as a soul. Your marriage should complement you. It should It should empower you and make you better. It should make you thrive and feel whole and, you know, connected to self, but not in an outward way, but in an inward way of truly using the power of two to be a team and to collaborate congruently. And as soon as it gets a little derailed, right? It goes off track. I use this, and if you're on, if you video, you'll see this. If it's just audio, but if I start with my hands kind of like little seesaws, and you're level, and when you meet each other, you know, it's like, hey, how you doing? And you grow and you fall in love, and you know, it's not always congruent. It might be a, you know, a little bit like that, like a seesaw. But eventually, when there's a proposal or a wedding or something of the climax of the, you know, you think, oh, this is the pinnacle of love and romance, like Cinderella and Disney just fell from the sky, right? But, you know, that's, and I don't mean to be all, you know, detrimental to that, that there's a lot of that truth to that, of that, the magical feeling that you have when you fall in love and you get married. But what happens is, well, you know, life happens, right? And maybe you get sick or you lose your job, or your cat dies, or, you know, you just have a bad day and your partner looks over and says, hey, what's going on? And you're like, and they notice, well, how come you're not contributing? How come you didn't take out the trash? How come you're not there for me and supporting me and what I need? And this person can either go over and lift them up, right? Or they can get mad and push them down, right? So eventually you're back at the basement. My hands don't go that low, but you know, and it's going to be the same way, the other way, right? So we have to take turns. Marriage is about elevating one another, about encapsulating the energy of both parties and bringing it to light and elevating it from a place of complete transparency and complete sharing, and not utilizing the other, your partner's weaknesses against them. And that's how I get a little bit into how high conflict divorce happens. If your spouse is not that kind of person that elevates you and is really there to support and make you better, and they drag you down and they criticize you and they pull you, marriage is going to be nearly impossible. I mean, a healthy marriage is going to be nearly impossible. I mean, you might be able to stay married. I'm not saying how happy you'll be or content or healthy, right? That's also how you know that your marriage is not doing so well. Your physical health starts to deteriorate. You get insomnia, you gain weight, you lose weight, your skin breaks out in a rash, you get sick, you get every itis there is known to man. Itis just means inflammation, right? So whether that be Lyme disease, thyroid disease, all this gluten stuff, and stress brings on illness. And if you're in a contentious, unhappy home, and then you add children and a pandemic, well, oh dear Lord, you just poured kerosene, gasoline, on a fire that was already smoldering. Now you have an inferno because the emotion is just bubbling and bubbling and bubbling, and it has nowhere to go. But the reason that divorce is so challenging, when and if a couple does in fact decide to divorce, is that high conflict people practice or behave in a way in such that they, so I can summarize it down into three behaviors. Number one, they're exploitive. They use other people. So when we use the word exploit, it has a negative connotation, right, Jackie? It means to use things, right? Not just use it like toothpaste, you know, but actually to like take the tube of toothpaste and throw it out, right? You're not actually going to consume it and use it for its value, for its intrinsic value, but you're going to look at it and be like, stupid toothpaste, throw it out. Perfectly new, it's in the box, you know, nothing wrong with it. It's just discarding, right? Okay, number two is exploit. Entitlement. Entitlement is when people that feel entitled, they feel like the rules don't apply to them, the laws. And by the way, divorce has a lot of them. The laws, the guidelines, the processes, the procedures, they don't apply to me. I don't have to fill out all that domestic relations financial affidavit. I don't have to disclose things. I don't have to show up at hearings. I don't have to be truthful and honest. And nope. It's like when they drive down the highway and they see the speed limit sign on the side of the highway and it says speed limit 65, whatever. They don't even look at their speedometer and notice, oh, I'm going 70. Maybe I should slow down a little. Or, oh, I'm going 40. Maybe I should speed up. You know, the sign, it's in Pluto. It doesn't even, they don't even acknowledge the sign. Now, people see a speed limit sign and think, oh, I should probably check my sign. Like, how fast am I going, right? And if you're going 40, you probably say, oh, maybe no wonder people are giving me the finger. I should probably speed up, you know? Or if you're going 110, well, you should probably go to jail. But, you know, you're looking, you're adapting the rule, the guideline, the law to you. You're applying it to you. You don't feel entitled that the rules don't apply to you. But people that, you know, are narcissistic, and this is no diagnosis, there's no personality, this is just a, and there's histrionic, antisocial, and borderline, but that's a whole nother podcast too. So people that just really don't think that the rules don't apply to them. So they feel entitled, they exploit people, and they have a complete lack of empathy. They just don't give a damn about you, your feelings, your emotions. They don't say, I'm sorry. They don't take responsibility for their behavior. If they do say, I'm sorry, it's usually sarcastic. And it's just a way of kind of, you know, manipulating you a little bit, but they just don't care. Sympathy is different than empathy. And they just have a complete lack of empathy. They don't cry at cotton commercials. You know, that's another joke, but you know, they don't have that feeling of emotion for what other people are going through. It's just about, well, this is what I want, damn it. And I don't give a damn about what you want. So that is why divorce can be so challenging with those types of people. And while I've specialized with an expert, that's not me. I have an expert that I work with. I'm the divorce expert. She's the personality expert. And we teamed up and created something called the How to Divorce a Narcissist Method. And we are launching it soon. It's a kind of a marriage of better divorce blueprint for high conflict people. So you would never think of building a house, Jackie, without a blueprint. Well, I wouldn't, because you know, where's it going to go? How many square feet? How much lumber do you need? Cement, plumbing, electrical, roofing, windows. Where's the toilets going to go? Well, you know, you got to have a plan. But people don't think of divorce that way. They just jump in it. They just trust the process. And that's the number one mistake people make. They trust their spouse to do the right thing, and they trust the process. And they just think, well, 2 billion people have gotten divorced before me. We're going to do this. And the mistakes pile up. The more you understand the process, the more you understand what not to do, and the more you understand what a high conflict spouse may or may not do, the smarter you are. And you don't fall for those little tools, tips, and tactics and habits that they pull out of their toolbox when they feel that they need to manipulate the process. It becomes this manipulative puzzle of what the way they want it to go. Now, if you're not dealing with that type of person, I'm, as a mediator, I'm a neutral party where I facilitate a conversation with both parties that are willing to come to the table in good faith. There's the trick, and be willing to make decisions in good faith as a collective team for the betterment of both of them. That includes complete financial transparency and really making decisions about the long-term benefits of both parties and the family as a whole. So there is your long-winded answer.
Well, you know what, that's incredible amounts of information. And it's going back to, if you're going through, what is your book coming out? When is this new book?
Oh, it's been out a year. It's available on Amazon, Better Divorce Blueprint. It's a 307-page book, and there's a 197-page companion hardcover workbook that goes with it, because I ask a lot of questions in the book. And I don't want you to read it like a Danielle Steele novel, like, oh yeah, that's nice. I want you to actually stop and contemplate and do the work. So the workbook gives you a place to record your feelings, your emotions, so that you have a place to document, which is really important in divorce, document, document, document. And I require all my clients to make a timeline of the marriage, everything that went well, everything that didn't go so well, because when and if you ever do end up in court or mediation, you're really going to need to back up what the courts call as the best interests of the children and what has happened historically throughout the course of the marriage. We're not talking about a one-time mistake. We all make mistakes. We're human. We make mistakes. Join the club. Get to the back of the line, right? No one's perfect. We all make mistakes, but it's that person that can't own up to it, take responsibility, say, yes, I screwed up. Really noticing those patterns, those habits, that's very, very important. So the workbook gives you an opportunity to document your emotions and also those practicalities in the marriage.
That's awesome. And so the other, the narcissist you were speaking about just prior to that, you were coming out with another collaborative book with somebody, did you say?
Well, it's not a book. It's actually an online course. And the reason, her name is Tiara Womack. She is quite the trailblazing woman. Her business is called The Brave Way. How's that for you, right? So Brave Way, and she's been in two very high profile narcissistic relationships. Mine was much more about the trial and the case. Like mine is more that I'm a unicorn of divorce stories. And then how that's been able to help me navigate for others, what to avoid and how to avoid that wisely, because divorce is so expensive and so long and so painful and contentious. If you can avoid staying out of litigation, even litigators will tell you, stay out of litigation if you can, right?
Yes. And how do you do that when somebody's not coming to the table with you? When somebody cannot be truthful, when somebody can't bring anything to the table?
Yeah. You hire someone like me that can guide you. I always say, I would get divorced for you if I could, but it's not legal. So I'm going to get divorced with you.
I love you.
You have a thinking partner. You have an expert in your back pocket. My clients, and I'm surprised I haven't got, I turned the volume off, beeped 15 times, but they always have a question, a concern, an issue, a thought, a feeling, an emotion. And again, remember I talked about the psychological, mental, emotional side, but also the financial, practical spreadsheet side. So they're all, your mind is racing a million miles an hour with all these questions and scenarios and strategies and concerns. And if you don't have an expert at your side, you're going to run to your attorney or your sister, which could be a problem, or your hairdresser or whomever, right? Yeah. And you're probably not going to get the greatest advice. Your number one thing to do if you're in a contentious divorce is to learn to mitigate outside influences. Just because your friend had a successful divorce doesn't mean that is going to apply to you. It's important that you understand that your case, your marriage, your situation is highly unique. And having somebody that knows you and knows the situation and is able to walk through that processes with you is very, very helpful. Next concern is to make sure that you have the right litigator that is representing you. Some litigators are not so good at cross-examination. They're not so good at discovery and depositions and subpoenas and all of those things that really are needed to force someone to comply. Many people do not like to comply with the laws, and that you need an attorney that is going to advocate for you legally, leave the rest to a divorce coach, but let that attorney advocate for you legally so that the opposite counsel and opposing party, whether they're the defendant or the plaintiff, it doesn't matter, is forced, we call that compliance, right, to comply with the processes, and they don't like to do it. It's like pulling teeth, but you need a lawyer, an attorney, a family law attorney. Don't just get any old attorney. There are 1.3 million attorneys in the US and only 12,000 family law attorneys, right? Don't just go look in the yellow pages or the Google or the YouTube or the Pinterest or find somebody's with a great page. Make sure they have a great reputation. I have a very big Rolodex. I know we don't use them anymore, but I love the term. And I work with attorneys in Canada, in US, all over to get the right client, the right attorney. It's a very important relationship that you build. Also, if you know that your partner is going to run around and, you know, hire the best of the best attorney, it's important that you conflict them out ahead of time and you go to see every attorney. Even if you don't hire them all, you know, go see 10, even if you just have to sit there and go, it's a pleasure to meet you, because it prevents your partner from being able to use any of them. Now that's a little bit of strategy. And no, I'm not kidding. It does prevent you from them using them. So now all of a sudden, so you'll realize if you're the one that's going to file, it takes some time and strategy and planning and research and organization. Now, if your partner's the one that said, hey, honey, I want a divorce, throws the complaint on your lap, then you don't have that advantage. But trust me, there's a lot of good attorneys out there. With the right people, you'll find the right connection. It takes some interviewing. And it's also very important to match your personality and demeanor with your attorney's personality and demeanor. If they're lackluster and kind of matter of fact and not enthusiastic, and your personality is like that too, maybe you're a match made in heaven. But you need to really, you know, make sure that the two of you feel like you're on the same page. You need to know, they need to know what you want, what your future looks like, and what is really important to you. I remember when I met my attorney, he said to me, Paulette, what do you want? And the first thing I said, with more tears running down my eyes, is I want my life back. And I said that, I want my life back, as I sat on the 36th floor of Longfellow Place overlooking Boston Harbor. And he looked at me, and he's 6'6" or something really tall, Boston, Triple Eagle, Boston College High School, Boston College, and Boston College Law School, you know, serious Bostonian here. And he said, you know, Paulette, I can't give you that. Matter of fact, I can't do that. And I was like, I didn't expect him to, but, you know, but he asked me what I wanted. So I want my life back. And I said, no, I think I just want a Mustang convertible and a little cottage by the beach. That's it. I just want my freedom. I'm done with the drama. I don't want to put up another Christmas tree and entertain. And I'm not anti-Christmas, everybody, don't panic. But yeah, it was a big entertaining family. And I was just like, nope, don't want it. And I just wanted a simple life, and I couldn't have it. I didn't want to live in a cold climate. I didn't want to be in a secretive I wanted to be able to be me. As you can see, I'm rather outgoing and gregarious, right, Jackie?
Yeah.
They wanted me to shut up and keep my mouth shut. And I was like, no, not going to happen. Nope. Married the wrong girl. Sorry. Not going to happen. So, I mean, I had my moments, but we just didn't jive. You know, what I wanted wasn't what he wanted. And it's funny, you know, all three of my kids are pretty outgoing. So, you know, we are who we are. The DNA is the DNA. So, you know, I've definitely offended and pissed off quite a few people in my life because I am an outgoing, honest, transparent person. And some people don't like that. They want you to put on the mask and keep your mouth shut and look like a Barbie doll. right?
Yes, I hear you. Don't speak up and don't be yourself and don't shine, right? Stay at home, cook my dinner. Look, we had an agreement, right? You were going to stay home and look after me, right? Don't you stand up and cause any attention, right?
Yeah, it's a horrible line, but it's something, I think it's an Usher's line, and it says, be a lady in the street, but a freak in the bed, right? Mm-hmm. That's a little rap for you, ladies and gentlemen. But it's that image, right? Like, I want you to look this way for me, but for the rest of the planet. And I what you see is what you get. I don't roll different ways. I never have, you know. And I tried really hard, and I did it for 14 years, and I was pretty good at it. Most of my friends were like, "You're unhappy." My maid of honor in my wedding was the most surprised. She said, "Wait, what? You want a divorce?" I was so good at trying my best to be, you know,
yeah,
happy. And inside, I was dying inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not his fault. Like, it wasn't anybody's fault. I was the one that said, well, actually, I don't even think I said yes, but you know, I did walk down the aisle in my pink dress. I did. I signed up for it. I get it. And I'm not anti-divorce. I'm happily remarried. But it's really important that you are with a spouse that lets you be you.
It's huge. It's huge because it's everything. Because if you're not standing in your authenticity, mm-hmm. power, you're dying. You're dying inside.
And I think I've calmed down a lot. Age does a lot. I mean, I'm 57.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta, you know, I don't need to stay up till 2 a.m. anymore. In fact, I hate it. But the spouse that I'm with is very Zen, and he calms me down. And he, you know, I call him Even Steven. He's like, very calm. And it, because of that, I think that my need to be so out there and not like, look at me, because I was a dancer. I hate costumes. I hate Halloween. I hate putting on, like, I don't even wear makeup. So a little mascara and lip gloss and that's it. I enjoy seeing women when they come to the feeling that this isn't what I wanted. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. But man, am I going to make the next chapter of my life so beautiful, so authentic, and growing their self-confidence, their careers, the passion and the vision that they have for their future is what keeps me doing what I do. It is a beautiful, beautiful transformation to watch anyone. And I have about 7 male clients right now. So I'm not, you know, anti-guy. I like, you know, I do love seeing the new chapter, the new person. And it's very hard to not get dragged into the muck and the mire of it and to stand up and move on, particularly if there are family members that don't agree and children that don't agree and other people that are fighting with you about it. You know, can't you just be quiet, go put on a little black dress and stop asking questions? And my response was silently, no. I went and did it. But to myself, I thought, damn you. You don't know who I am, do you? I'm not saying that's healthy. Ladies and gentlemen, do not do what I do, you know, or did.
Yeah.
You know, it will eat away at you. I got tinnitus. I got TMJ. I had a root canal. I had nodules on my vocal cords. I had my tonsils taken out. Everything in my throat because I stopped sharing who I was. Again, I had a career I didn't pick. Remember that?
Yeah.
It all started with me letting other people make my decisions for me. I mean, my name, I'm a junior. And when I said yes to my mother, or actually, I don't know that I said yes again. I just showed up in my hair in a bun, taught a few jazz classes, and you know, it was fun. It was great. You know, 5, 6, 7, 8, step, kick, step, turn, step, shuffle, ball, change, clap. And there I was, you know, years later going, the hell am I doing here? I don't even like leotards. So it is so empowering to allow, whether that be mediation, coaching, consulting, and helping corporations help their employees. Productivity crashes by a minimum of 40% during divorce, and it lasts about 5 years. Contemplation, organization, management, just surviving, healing, getting through it, changing your name, dating. Oh my, you know, woo, that's a whole nother day at the races, right? Of what is the next chapter of my life going to look like? That can also be very scary because the old you thought, well, I don't want to screw that up again. You know, I made a mistake and I'm afraid of repeating history. And well, if 50% of first divorce ends in 50% of marriages end in divorce, 60% of second and 70% of third, that's not such good statistics, Jackie. So we don't want to repeat the patterns of the past. It's very easy. So corporations don't realize that if you take a company, let's say they have 100 employees or 1,000 employees or Amazon, I don't know, 4 bazillion employees, how many do they have? And you take the average salary of the company, of course, that's a huge range, but that's just the average. And you take it by how many, just take the statistics, how many of those employees will divorce? That's just a fact. They will divorce every single year. Year after year after year. And if they lose 40% productivity, how does that work for your corporation, your business? Not good. And 5 to 7% of them are going to quit or move. And the attrition rate right now, oh my, the great resignation, how many million people? I think it was 20 million just quit their jobs last year. I'm not kidding. 20 million in the US. I don't know what it is in Canada, but I'm sure it's not much better. Now, how those people that just said, see you later, I'm not doing this anymore, that has nothing to do with divorce. So you got to deal with that. Then your employees who are divorcing because, well, they can't think anymore. They've got to move, or they've got now have full legal responsibility of kids that there's no sharing anymore. And they're it's just, oh my God, or you know, financial ramifications. They have to sell the home. They have to get a different job. They become entrepreneurs or whatever they decide to do. They decide to move to France just because they can't deal with it. It's extremely stressful. So the companies do not realize that divorce is perhaps, I'm going to say, is the operating expense they don't know they have. Now, if you're even an entrepreneur and you have 10 employees, let's say you have a store, and you know, two of them probably will divorce, if not more. Well, and how's that going to work for your company, right? Year after year. This isn't just 1 year, ladies and gentlemen. This is every year. So we come in, it's a two-tiered solution. We train all of the C-suite executives and the HR personnel that are, you know, aware of that company employee benefits to have sensitivity training. We educate them, we certify them, we train them and what to look for. And then we come in, I'm the director of the coaching and management side where I team up that employee after they've been put through the, you know, the sensitivity training of, is this what you're going through? How are you doing? It isn't just like, here, sign up. There is a very systematic process that they go through. But once they have determined, yes, I'm either contemplating divorce, managing divorce, or having a hard time healing from it, they step in and say, we have a solution. And I team up that employee with the right coach. And it's usually 4 to 6 sessions. It depends on the company. Some employees pay for 100% of that. Sometimes it's 50%. It depends on the company, how many employees they have. And then if they would like to, in fact, continue that relationship, well, in fact, they have that option to do so. So that is how I, from corporations all the way to individuals, help companies address and manage and solve the divorce problem from their assets, both in their finances, but also their employees, because their employees are an asset.
Wow, that's invaluable. Holy cow. And just, this is information that we don't really talk about and we're not educated in this stuff. It's all kind of a negative, right? And so And there's the stories, right? Like the boys, oh, she took all my money, right? You know,
oh, yes, your mother took all my money, like it was mine, yeah.
Everything's there.
That's right. Remember I said when you march down the aisle, there should be a judge there saying, just so you two lovebirds know, this is a collaborative, equal, equitable. So if you buy a car, it's 50% his and 50% hers. If you own a business, it's 50% his and 50% yours. So, you know, we don't always realize that. And you can't just, we'll get into that in another conversation. So we have to educate those young people about if you are not willing to share your life with someone, don't get married.
Yes. Yes. And whatever you grow together, it's not just, yours, right? No matter how many stories and whatever you tell people about somebody,
right?
Yeah. Which is, I think, another thing that happens is there's a lot of conversation to groups of people about somebody, about this person's done this, and then it kind of just builds up, this deception about, well, you know, if somebody says something to you, so-and-so did this. Unfortunately, we all believe that as truth, because why would that person say that if it wasn't true, right? And then all of a sudden you've got groups of people who are thinking untruths about you and that energy being directed at you. And you just have to wait for the truth to surface. That's kind of been what I've been experiencing.
There's a lot to be said about that. And I completely agree with you. That is going back to what I said earlier about learning to mitigate outside influences, right? And for anybody's listening, please get my book at Amazon. But I'm also happy, reach out to Jackie. And in the show notes, I'm going to give her a PDF to a little quick ebook about the 12 top divorce mistakes people make. And they're very important that you know them. And one of them is social media, thinking that social media is harmless fun. It ain't. Get the heck off it. And thinking that, you know, the outside influences or the rumors, as you were saying, really have more weight or bearing on you. It's just noise and it's hard to ignore, and not engaging in the gossip. Don't engage in it, right? Shut the valve off. Don't allow them. If they want to talk about you, they're going to talk about them. Talk about, what is that? What is that little t-shirt saying? Well-behaved women rarely make history, right?
Yeah.
Let them talk.
And it's not my business what they think about me, right?
Correct. It's not my business what people think about me. And, I also want everyone to know that we think that other people care about what we're doing more than they really do. They really don't care. So, you know, it might entertain them for 5 minutes, but it really, you just have to step into your voice and know in your heart that you're doing what you need to do to be healthy and whole and make the situation less contentious. Sometimes staying in a broken marriage is more damaging for the children and your spouse and yourself than it is to have the strength and resiliency and courage to make that very challenging decision to divorce with dignity and make smart choices. So it isn't easy, but it is ultimately the better choice for your health, psychological, mental, and emotional, physical health, to make sure that you're moving forward wisely. So get the book. I'm happy to send it to you. I'll give it to Jackie. I'm here to make sure nobody makes any mistakes that I can avoid you making.
Oh, you know what? You are a gift. You really are. This information is really invaluable. It really is. And I hope that we can do some more sessions on kind of different points that you have, because there's so much information here.
There is a lot, I know.
Yeah, love it. Thank you. Well,
thank you. Such an honor. Anytime.
And is there like anything else that's really, you feel that I haven't asked you, just that you think it's, you know, you need to share before we kind of wrap?
If there's any takeaway, listeners, it's to don't go it alone. And make sure that you discriminate who you choose to share things with. sometimes the people that were in your tribe when you were happily married, or you thought you were happily married, they're not really your tribe. Be very careful. It could be somebody very close to you. So it be very careful. It is, I don't know the exact statistics, but I do know that 86% of evidence in divorce comes from social media and gossip. So be very careful. All those little innocuous text messages and phone calls and little, you know, be really careful who you share things with. It will typically come back and bite you in a place that you do not want to be bit. It is very important that you discern and learn to discriminate. And it's best to keep it to yourself until you know you have somebody that you really hold sacred and that they do honor and value your confidentiality. That is something that's really important. I've seen a lot of people make that mistake. They just, you know, well, she's a friend or he's a friend. And
Very good advice. Yeah. And because you're such, you know, you're not really, if you're, you know, broken down, you're kind of not really thinking about that. You're just believing that person is going to be there for you.
Your best interest at heart. Yeah. And they may, and they're human too. Like, you don't need to throw them under the bus. No. Don't put them in a situation where they would be tempted to put them in an awkward situation. It's best to go to a professional, a counselor, a parenting expert, a tax attorney, a fiduciary. Get a certified divorce financial analyst. Find a certified divorce lending professional, a certified divorce real estate expert, a certified divorce coach. There are a zillion in every different, you know, remember the Rolodex, depending on what the question is. So, you know, start with finding the right mental health practitioner that can help you get really clear on the past. I have a whole presentation on what is the difference between therapy and divorce coaching. So yes, you and I could do a series for a month and a half about many different topics about the work I do. But for the most part, it is important that you find the right professional with the right experience, with the right training to be able to address the right answers. Don't use your family law attorney. Again, find a family law attorney and don't sign a retainer until you found the right one. But don't use them for emotional support. Don't do it. They're lovely people. Some of my best friends are attorneys, but they're counselors at law.
Yes. Yes. Very, very good advice. Very good.
And they're expensive.
Yeah. So that's an expensive counselor, right? And they're not interested.
Yeah. I see, you know, people that use counselors for law advice and they use lawyers for counseling. Bad, bad choice.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Wow. You wouldn't go get, you know, you wouldn't have a dentist deliver a baby.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You know, find the right profession, unless it was an emergency, you know, fine. Anybody could do it. But, you know, you got to find the right professional. Yeah. You wouldn't have an insurance broker do your taxes.
Yeah.
Find the right professional to help you with it. So, but have no fear. The future will be better. There is a bright light. I say on the first page of my website, Better Divorce Academy, breathe, you're not alone. You're worried about your options, your finances, your path forward, and whether you will ever feel happy again. I'm here to tell you that it's okay to feel overwhelmed right now. Just know it will get better. I will show you the way.
I love that. That's just so true. That is truth. Doesn't feel like that some days, but that is the truth.
Yeah, I know. Well, until next time, thank you, Jackie.
Thank you so much. So great to meet you. Okay. And we'll have all of your information and all of that in our notes with the video that we're going to be launching. And I look forward to meeting up with you again.
Thanks for hanging out with me and watching the latest episode of The Natural Healing Reel. Take care, and I'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for joining me today. If you were inspired by today's episode, please share it with a friend or a loved one. My hope is you feel empowered to take some action, no matter how big or small. Action that allows you to step out of the chaos and thrive on your own terms. If this podcast added any value to your day, please review it on iTunes, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, keep thriving in the chaos.